Wow, here we are live, so to speak, on the Principal Liner Notes podcast. This is the third video podcast, and this is the first video podcast in which I interview another great human being, and this is also the return appearance of a great friend and thought partner and bandmate Lauren Kaufman. And I'm so grateful that Lauren is coming to us during a well-earned, well-deserved break. I hope, and by the way, we didn't even talk about the weather, because that is what's happening right now. Are everybody safe and warm, and did you get enough bread and milk for the family? Are you guys fine in Long Island?
Is really, really cold here in Long Island, New York. I'm not gonna lie. It is freezing, actually, and it is so hard. I live in a beach community, so it is so hard to get my kids to usually wear jackets. Like, they could wear shorts all year round and be good. But you know, when my kids are putting on sweatpants and jackets and hats, it's cold. It's cold. But you know, at the moment, we're good. And I always say at the moment for everything, because you live one moment to the next, right? Like, you're good right now. You never know what's gonna happen. I hope everything's gonna be okay. But we're supposed to get warm up a little bit by the end of the week. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, good. I hope you guys are safe and there aren't any power outages or anything like that. I'm here in Georgia for winter break, visiting with the in-laws, and it's very cold down here. We talk about Hotlanta. I'm in a suburb of Atlanta right now. I'm in Roswell, and it's, I think last time I checked, it was 19 degrees, which is the, again, folks are not used to that down here in the South. But again, no snow or anything like that. But again, I'm glad that you guys are safe, and I hope that folks who are viewing this in some way, shape, or form, you are safe and free from harm and warm. And again, if you have a cup of something or a cup of coffee, I didn't bring mine for the podcast. I know Lauren's got hers.
I did.
Awesome. It's Celebrate Monday. Which is now the day in which this podcast will drop on a weekly basis, and I'm excited about that for 2023. As I mentioned the last podcast, I'm recommitting to creating content and putting things out there for you, the listener and the viewer, on a regular basis. And speaking of regular basis, I think is it Sunday evenings, Lauren, when your blog post drops? Is that when usually?
That's funny. I don't really have a committed day for my blog post drop.
Really?
It tends to be on the weekend, because that's when I have a little bit more time to think about what I want to write about. And so maybe I have to look, Sean. I have to go back and see when all my blog posts drop. They're probably on the weekend.
Yeah, and I get it. It's the same thing with this podcast. Like, this is a weekend deal. Sometimes in the middle of the week, I'll put something out depending on when the spirit strikes me. But I know, and currently you are in a new gig, new position this school year as the director of literacy for a K-12 district in Long Island, right?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. So, yeah, last year I had the opportunity to serve as an assistant principal. And then this year I am serving as the director of literacy K-12 in an amazing school district in Long Island, New York. And I'm kind of going back to my roots here with literacy. I have a passion for literacy, everything, reading, writing, speaking, listening, thinking, talking. So it's really exciting to get this opportunity to work in an organization that's so supportive, and to be inspired by so many educators around me within my professional learning community, also within my professional learning network. I can't forget about those people too, who bring me all the ideas. But it's been quite the journey, and I'm so grateful for it.
Yes, and I know and again, full disclosure, and I have shared this before on social media, and I've shared this in person with you. Your blog post, Empower, Collaborate, and Connect, is my favorite of all the blog posts are out there. So I am a unabashed subscriber, and that's one where, as soon as it lands in my inbox, I read it immediately, and then I will put it back on the shelf and read it again a few hours later. And I'm always coming away with a sense of all of those things. Like, I feel empowered, I'm ready to collaborate, and I feel connected to you and others. This particular your most recent post, which I want to kind of be the focal point of our conversation today, is reflective of the last several blog posts in which you've kind of echoed and written about your journey in your new role as director of K-12 literacy. And I'd love for us to talk about the four ideas to leverage learning and level up literacy for all. Again, another masterful, accessible blog post. Again, for those of you that are tuning in, and I'll tweet this out and put this in the show notes. If you are looking to read it, I highly recommend that you do subscribe to Lauren's blog post, and you can find it at laurenmkaufman.com. And again, I'll put it in the show notes. She's also somebody to follow on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook as well. And we'll have all of her kind of social media link ups in the show notes a little bit later on. But again, I would just love to hear about the inspiration for this particular blog post.
Sure. Well, first of all, my cheeks are really hurting right now and they're really hot and really, I feel like they're turning red because I feel extremely honored and humbled that you would say all of those amazing things about my writing. I know that you know the story, but I think it was a couple of years ago now. George Karros had challenged me to write this blog. He said,
Right.
"You need to have your own platform." And I was like, "Okay." And it took a little push, but here I am still writing today. I think I have over 60 blog posts now under my belt. So it's quite amazing. And as you're speaking about this, I'm just thinking about I was going through some of my blog posts this morning, preparing for this podcast today, and it's like you see the evolution of your writing over time, right? When I started my blog post, I see me, of course, in the blog post. It's my writing, but I think the more you write, the better you get, like anything else in life. And you develop a style of writing over time. And I think we've talked a lot about my style of writing. For this particular blog post, it's interesting. I was recently asked to speak at a conference. And a couple of conferences, and I was thinking about, wow, I need something a little bit new, a little bit fresh. But of course, I would only present about things that I believe in and things that I've employed myself with teachers, with educators. I've had an amazing journey in my career. I'm only a second year administrator, but I'm still a teacher at heart. I'm a learner, I'm a teacher, and the way I approach everything that I do in education is as a thinking partner, a thought partner. I'm really an instructional coach at heart. I believe that we should live in coaching to help others, to elevate others, to bring out the gifts in others. And part of the reason I write is really to reflect on my own learning. That's so important. As I've written over time and I embrace that philosophy more and more, I think my writing resonates a little bit more with people because I'm not writing for a particular audience. I'm writing for myself. And with that, the authenticity, I think, comes through a little bit more. At least that's the feedback that I've gotten. So when I wrote this blog post, the impetus for it was really to think of some new ideas, but also really frame it in what's going on in education today. We've come off a challenging couple of years, and we're trying to meet kids and adults and everybody where they are, wherever you are on the continuum of learning, wherever you are with your mental health. Everybody's in a different state right now of thinking and feeling. And I really, when I write, I try to look through all of those different lenses. to see where is everyone at. I need to meet everyone where they are, and I know that it won't meet everyone where they are because you can't possibly do that. But I always like to think about both sides when I'm writing. So lately, I've been thinking a lot about all the things in education that are coming to the surface because a lot of articles and research and ideas that are out there right now is that we need to catch children up in education. And there's tons of programs and things out there that are just kind of inundating us, you know, with what do we do? Where do we start? Where do we go? There are different philosophies and different approaches and different ways that we can approach teaching and learning. And sometimes we get overwhelmed by that. You know, there are a lot of priorities in different districts or initiatives. Some people call it initiatives. I don't really like calling it initiatives because I think it scares people. So I like thinking of it as priorities. And there's a lot out there in terms of literacy. Literacy is a hot button topic right now because we are trying to accelerate learning. And I like to say accelerate learning because that's what we're always doing, right? For learners. So we're trying to meet them where they are and then elevate them. So really the impetus for this post was like, I'm thinking about like, wow, there is no one way, right? If there was one program, one approach, one way, we would all be doing it, right? We would all be doing it. And I think as I was writing this post, I was thinking about, wow, I've been so lucky to serve in so many different organizations and have worked with so many different educators and different populations of learners. And what I've come to understand over a 17-year period of time is that we need to develop a more comprehensive approach to teaching and learning because everybody responds differently to a practice. So we try to take different practices, right, and put them together to meet the needs of every single learner. So the beginning of that post really talks about that because I have a lot of people approaching me like, Lauren, what program should we be using? What approach should we be using in education with literacy? You know, we can sit here and talk about all the different philosophies and approaches all day long. There's plenty of research out there and articles that will do that for us already. Like, so that's not why I was writing this blog post to get into a debate over which approach is better than the other.
Right.
But the core of it all, the core and the heart of this post and of my approach is always putting the learner at the center of everything we do. And how do we do that? We have to get to know them as human beings and people before we can level up learning, right? And that's where the title comes from, Four Ideas to Leverage Learning and Level Up Literacy for All. Because you can do the best intervention in the world, but unless you know your learners, how successful will it be, right? So that was the impetus for this post.
And I love how and again, you know, right now in man, you just hit on so many notes here. Like this may be like five or six different episodes in and of itself, but because you just drop several like just really beautifully wrought pearls of wisdom there. Really cool notes, like a great jazz musician. You just riffed beautifully. This is what I love about talking with you, is we can kind of riff and go in all kinds of different directions. But I think really the heart of what you just said is you know, transcending some of the debates with programs and if you want to go there and go to the What Works website or clearinghouse, sure. And if you want to go find the journal articles, fine. But really the most logical and most important starting point is remembering that whom we serve, our students, they're at the center. And I love how you frame that in the first part of that blog when you get into the four ideas. I just your diction is just amazing. Lean into learners. Lean into learners. It's just, you know, you're not going to settle for, you know, kind of the tried and true things, but taking that this notion of lean into, and it's active, and it's accessible, right? I'd love to hear you riff on that first idea, leaning into learners and building upon what you just established there.
Sure. Before I do that, if it's okay, I also want to mention that I am a really big believer in how educators really need to be in the driver's seat of their
Yes.
learning. And
Yes.
that's something else that I mentioned in the beginning of that post. I think over the years, I have come to realize that yes, your district will provide you with programs, will provide you with resources, will provide you with professional learning. But we have different learners in front of us every single year. And we can't solely rely on our organizations to develop us. As educators, as learners, as thinkers, you're going to have specific cases where you're going to need to dig a little bit deeper. And you are going to have to understand what it is you need to help every student. And that looks a little bit different every year. And I think, that was one of the big drivers too of this blog post is knowing that a lot of this stuff I'm going to be sharing with you right now and starting with Leaning Into Learners is nobody gave this to me. I went out and I searched for things that have worked for others, right? Because we are in the business of learning from each other and curating information from each other, and consuming information so that we can be creators, right? We need to be consumers to be creators. And as we're creating, we're also consuming more and learning from our students and learning from our colleagues. And then we're able to refine and pivot and adjust in real time. Okay. So when I talk about the four ideas, to leverage learning and level up literacy for all, I start with lean into learners. And I talk about this question. I ask this question, how will you invest time in getting to know and intentionally connect with your learners? This goes back to the Rita Pearson TED Talk. Learners don't want to learn from people they don't like,
Exactly.
and our kids, they feel that. People feel that. They feel that when you have a genuine interest in who they are as people, you tend to perk up a little bit, right? When you know somebody cares about you, that's when you're cognitively engaged and you're productive in your learning. So the first thing I talk about is, I was using giving a nod back to George Kuros again. George Kuros has these five questions that he once wrote about in a blog post, and he puts them out there quite often. And I'll share some of the questions with you now. One is, what qualities do you look for in a teacher? What does success look like to you at the end of the year? What's one big question you have? What are you passionate about? What are your strengths and how can we utilize them? See, I'm rattling them off the top of my head because
Nail
that's how
them.
much I believe in these questions. I know them. I've used them with my learners. And, I also believe in providing multiple pathways for kids, for teachers to respond to questions, to respond to learning. So, I would take these questions and I would have them give them choice. Do you want to answer in a flip video? Do you want to answer in a Google form? Do you want to answer in a Google Doc, in a slide deck? There are so many different ways we could do that, or just in a plain old notebook, And what I also like about these questions is that they're not specific to a content area. So, like, very often we'll give out, learning surveys, right? And as literacy teacher, I might have put out a reading interest survey to kids, getting to know them as readers. What books do you like? What genres do you like? But rather than being so content specific, this really opens up dialogue, that really gives you so much more. It's a really great investment in the emotional and instructional deposit box. Because you get back so much cool information and you can use these questions over the course of the year, and you see the evolution of these questions. And what's really nice too is that you can not only use these questions with kids, But you can flip the questions and you can use them if you're a leader. You can use them with teachers. What qualities do you look for in a leader instead of a teacher, right? Getting that question back, what does success look like to you at the end of the year for a teacher? So interesting. You get a variety of examples. I would use this with families too. What does success look like for you, for your child at the end of the year? What qualities do you look for in your child, teacher? So do you see how you can take one question and refine it to meet the needs of your audience? What's really cool about using that as a teacher with parents and kids is that you can create this beautiful narrative and profile on a child. So you can see a couple different lenses, through different lenses. So the child might answer something, then the parent might answer the same question a little bit differently, which is really interesting. So you're able to bring that together to create this story and to have this picture of who is sitting in front of you. Really important. So that's one way that you can lean into learners. Something I also did recently in a few of my department meetings is, as I'm navigating this new role, of director of literacy, I have a lot of people to get to know because it's K-12. So there are a lot of teachers, a lot of administrators, a lot of staff, families, so many different people. And so, I recently went to NCTE. I was lucky enough to go there, and I attended a session, a Wakelet session, actually, with my friend, Tisha Poncio. She's amazing. And she actually had asked us a question that we curated our answers into Wakelet. And I love Wakelet as a platform. I think it's a great space to curate resources. Same. And it's a multimedia experience that you're getting. So I thought of the question, I think that I learned in another session, what book turned you into a reader?
I love that.
And this, it's a great question because it really brings you back to that moment in time, that significant moment in time where you had that aha moment as a learner, as a reader, when you transacted with a book and it spoke to you in a magical way, it brings you back in time. So what was so beautiful for me to see as I'm getting to know teachers is they saw this question and they naturally started talking to each other about these books. And they said, Lauren, like, how far are we going back here? I said, I'm not going to give you the answer. You tell me what you want to share. What book really hooked you? And we had teachers going back to like the Babysitter's Club series and Nancy Drew series and all of these, a lot of series, by the way. It seems like series really hook us as readers because we get so committed. Yeah, right. We get committed to the author, to their style of writing, to the characters. We it's like a great sitcom or Netflix series, right?
And then you binge it, right?
And we get committed. Yeah, we have to. Yes, yes. So it was so beautiful to see all of these amazing conversations that were ignited by that question. And I just sat back and I was enjoying listening to everybody and learning about everybody and seeing them go back to their childhood, the smile stretched across their faces. It was unbelievable. And I sat back, didn't have to say anything. We curated the information in Wakelet. We can either use an image or text, however we wanted. And during that process, they're actually recommending books to each other too. And for their kids at home, they're like, oh, my child hasn't read that series yet. And so at the very end of it, I said to the teachers, I said, so talk to me about the impact of this activity, and they were like, well, it got us talking, it got us thinking, it got us learning from one another, right? And then, can you do this with your students? What do you think? This is something you could do tomorrow. Right. You don't even need technology to do this, really. You could do it in any way that you want. So that's how I was leaning into the teachers I'm working with now. When I say lean into learners, adults are learners, kids are learners, you could use this in any capacity and you could change up the question, right? So again, going back to that question, how will you invest time in getting to know and intentionally connect with your learners? Those are a couple of ways that I do that.
Wow. I'm smiling hard. My cheeks are sore right now if you're watching
Aww.
because again, there's so much goodness that you've just shared there based upon one simple question. And when we talk about lean into learners, you're not standing on tables. You're not doing some elaborate technology. I mean, it can be as deep and wide as you want it to be, but also to the reminder, for us that are in leadership positions, I mean, all of us are called to be leaders in some way, shape, or form. This is another entry point. This is another another conversation that you can start to create that investment of learning and connection and authenticity in the space, whether it is a PLC, whether it is a classroom, whether it is a lit circle, whether it is a reader's workshop or whatever it may be. That question, it's also to me, as I think about it, and this is on Celebrate Monday and this is a kickoff for the week, and it's a good question to ask on to someone on a colleague on a Monday coming maybe back after a long break and just maybe putting up something in your workroom or putting out something as a Wakelet or a Padlet and helping folks connect back to that joy, connect back to themselves. It creates a sense of well-being. And I mean, even as you were talking about series and books, I was thinking, man, I loved the Hardy Boys or, the S.E. Hinton books. For me, those works. And it's just such a great, it's a beautifully disarming, empowering question to ask families, students, leaders, colleagues. I love how you frame that. The second idea, and again, your answer exemplifies this in some ways, how you answered the last question, how we're engaged in this dialogue, layering those sources of meaning. A lot of how you roll, Lauren, is very much like this kind of beautifully wrought novel. And you can look at your responses and look at your writing at different levels, right? And you can take it as, oh, these are practical ideas that I can take into the classroom next day, or oh, wow, this is a great reflection for me as a learner to be active and to be engaged in my own learning and not just wait for the three-ring binder at the conference or wait for the PowerPoint to come after the faculty meeting. So how is that kind of that active layering of layers of stories into meaning? How do we translate that?
Stories are the windows into our soul, right? They are what makes us who we are. We live in all of these moments in time. And I write about that a lot in different posts that I've shared. And sometimes when we're living in these moments of time, we don't recognize the power of their impact and how will they empower us in our future. Sometimes when we're in the present, we're not thinking about the future. And then when we get to the future, we're able to look back in time and say, wow, that's why that happened. And I think I've spoken about that with you before.
Yes.
So because I believe it, and it's something that I'll keep talking about because the way I connect with people, and I think the way people connect with people is through the power of story. Why? Because it makes us who we are as human beings. I might walk into work and I'm Lauren, the director of literacy. And some people might view me that way who don't know me, but I'm really Lauren, the little girl who grew up actually not liking reading, believe it or not. I was
As
not a reader.
the daughter of an English teacher, right? Yeah, as well, correct?
Yes. My dad taught English for 39 years. My mom is an educator for many, many years. She was a reading teacher, a special educator. My grandfather wrote books. He was an avid reader. He was a law professor, an attorney. It was like, how could I not like reading? This is terrible, you know? But the truth is, you know, I think there were many experiences I had, and they weren't like terrible experiences. I think I was just a product of the educational landscape of the time, where it was like you had to turn to page 117 in a Basil reader, read this story, and then answer these canned questions. And to me, that was reading, right? But I don't think, you know, I had great teachers. I don't think it was their fault, really. I just think that was what it was. That was teaching at the time, you know? But that's a story in itself, right? We're talking about how we layer stories into learning. And that's a product, those stories made me who I am today. And it wasn't till I was in my 20s that I rediscovered the magic of reading. And you basically had, and you know where it was? In the Twilight series, believe it or not. I mean,
Really?
you literally had to rip these books out of my hands if you wanted any focus or attention from me. I thought to myself, wow, I guess I really could love reading. And then when I was doing my master's program in literacy, I was exposed to a lot of different types of literature and books that, you know, I really connected with. So, you know, but again, all stories and the question I paired with layering stories into learning is how can you intentionally create spaces for learners to share how they view the world through stories? So I remember, I don't always remember like lessons that teachers taught me, but I remember their stories. I remember how they made a particular skill or a strategy they were teaching meaningful through the power of story. And the teachers who gave me the space to express who I was as a person and a human being, and also let me listen to other kids do that. And that's important too, because that's what helps us embrace other perspectives, respectfully embrace other perspectives and open our minds up a little bit. You know, we're exposed to different things as we navigate the world, and we then have our own, you know, internal bias, implicit bias. That's just who we are and how we've been shaped to be. And then the more we are able to attentively listen to others, the more open we become to other ideas and things. So I came up with this almost like this little protocol for stories for people who might want a little help with how they can embed that into their instructional planning and their learning. One I say is to personalize. You might say to the kids, I was thinking about, or I remember when, or let me tell you a story. That certainly perks their ears up when you say to kids or to adults, let me tell you a story. All of a sudden, they're listening, right? So that's personalizing. Then through connection, you want learners to connect their own stories to a learning experience that you're sharing with them that day. You might be saying, this is making me think. Or I'm realizing that, you know, and that's showing somebody else through your story or through their story that you're now connecting a new idea with that. And you are elevating them naturally by doing that because you're saying, you know, I'm realizing since you're telling me that, or this is making me think now. And then the sharing part is having learners share their connections with peers so that they can form new ideas. That's how we innovate, right? Innovation doesn't have to be this complex idea. It's just, you know, as George would say, you know, new and better ways of doing things, you know, in the innovator's mindset, of course.
Right.
So you could say, your story is making me think, your story is making me wonder. You know, ask questions, develop and cultivate that curiosity. We talk about that all the time, how it's important to embrace curiosity in the classroom because those questions are launch pads for new ideas. And that develops agency and ownership, right, over our learning. So layering storytelling into all content areas, no matter what you're teaching, is really, really important for to get learners to connect.
And that's kind of a perfect segue. And again, you've sprinkled this throughout our conversation, this notion of voice and agency and being able to not only just launch it and, you know, hey, go out and tell your story, but to leverage that in a meaningful way. You made mention of things like, you know, curating ideas or empowering others to curate ideas, whether it's through Wakelet or Padlet or what have you. But again, the third idea of launching and leveraging choice and agency through that. And you give some real practical ideas in the blog post.
Thank you. Yeah, that actually does fit in nicely with this next idea. So with launching and leveraging choice, I thought about this question. How can you empower students to develop agency and take ownership over their learning?
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of things that I think about with this is that when people are given choice, just generally speaking, it empowers them. And there's a difference between empowerment and engagement. When we empower people to do things, there becomes this intrinsic motivation to want to do it. You can't engage in something really authentically and deeply without being empowered to do so. So I've seen engagement before, but how are we engaging? You know, it could look like students are participating in an activity. That's engagement. They're engaging, but do they feel empowered to engage in that? And that's the difference there that we need to look to. Just because kids or adults are working doesn't always mean that they're working productively, efficiently, and effectively and in a meaningful way. Right?
Right on.
So, right? So how can we do that? Some of the things that I've done in the past, I know a couple of years ago, I took Pat nod to Patlin Tucker, who's wonderful. She is like the queen of blended learning.
Absolutely.
And she is the one who taught me about these choice boards and giving kids the option to choose how they want to learn in that choice board. So one of the things that I had done in the past was any skill or strategy I had already taught. It always had to be a previously taught skill or strategy, because you want kids to feel successful with this choice activity and that they own this choice activity, but also there'll be something in the choice board that like lifts it to the next level or challenges their thinking a little bit. So it's almost like they have this confidence, this courageous confidence in the and ownership over choosing something within the choice board. And the choice boards I actually give in the blog post, I actually share the template. So if anybody's interested in the choice boards, it actually comes from Catlin Tucker's work. And then I made it my own. And of course, you can now make it your own. You know, there were all different activities within those choice boards and also multiple pathways for showing me your learning through those choice boards. So there might be a ton of digital texts that kids can choose from. And then how do they respond to that text? They could do it digitally. They can do it by writing in notebook and paper. You know, they would just have to tell me how do you choose to respond, so I know where to look for your response and give you feedback, timely, high quality feedback, right? So that's one thing I did with the choice boards. And then menus. I loved kids. I'm not a big fan of homework unless it's really meaningful. I used to use a lot of menus with homework that just made sense and were authentic, stuff that kids had already been doing. It was just more of like a reinforcement. I'm not really into homework that takes away time from family and to get kids just to relax. I feel like, you know, if we're talking about neuroscience here and we talk about focus mode and diffuse mode, when we're in school, we're giving kids a lot of information sometimes and they're focusing a lot, but we also want to create those spaces where they're in diffuse mode and they're able to connect the dots to what they've learned so that they can create. You know, we've been talking a lot about that consumption versus creation. And I feel like those menus really allow for that. They allow students to take what they've consumed in focus mode and then go into diffuse mode and really connect the dots through those menus. So that's how I did that.
And the thing about menu and choice, and I know in the wake of COVID and this kind of this little bit of shift that we're going through, you know, especially when we talk about students' emotional well-being, something about choice and menu boards and those kinds of things, I think enhance that well-beingness or that opportunity to create an environment of well-being and trust between, you know, student and teacher. It's invitational, and by having that empowerment to have choice, it also creates that empowerment to have voice and ownership. And again, to me, that's the secret sauce, or part of the secret sauce, for creating that sense of well-being for the child in the classroom.
Yeah, and if we want to bring it to the teacher and educator level, the admin level, we're all learners. That's why we're in education. I'm thinking now I have to give a big shout out to my Ed Camp family, my Ed Camp Long Island family, because that is making me think. I'm thinking about Choice Board right now. I'm thinking of the Ed Camp board right now. When you go to an Ed Camp, educators can, in the moment, put up any sessions they'd like to facilitate, and then you all of the participants who attend Ed Camp, they get to choose where they would like to go based on their professional learning needs. And there's this unspoken rule in Ed Camp is that if you go to a session and it doesn't meet your needs or it's not something you're connecting with, that you're allowed to leave that session and go to another. And no one, there are no egos in Ed Camp. That's okay. Or it's not that it's not meeting your needs. Maybe you saw two amazing sessions were up on the board or three amazing sessions, and you commit to saying, ooh, this is like a 45-minute block or a 1-hour block. I'm gonna hit this session, 20 minutes each. I'm gonna go to three sessions right now. So educators need that too. And I find that after we hosted our Ed Camp in October of 2022, and we hadn't done it in person in like 3 years or something, the energy and the positivity of being there on a Saturday with so many different educators from all over, it was really talk about empowerment. It was really empowering. Therefore, everybody was engaged, and we didn't stop talking about it for a really long time, and we're still not. We're really excited about our next Ed Camp opportunities. But you just made me think about that because I'm thinking about choice boards can really look different in every space, but they're important and they're powerful.
You know, and just a quick nod to Ed Camp Long Island. I saw, you know, I follow you on Twitter, I follow you on social media. You're really good about kind of texting me directly the goodness that's going on, as a way to kind of empower me, but also whatever I can do to help and support, and I'll retweet, and I'll do that without question. But what I loved about Ed Camp Long Island was, it you know, and Ed Camps have kind of, you know, I think because of COVID and distance and all of that, have gone through a bit of a decline, and they've been seen as outdated. But you all really, for me as a learner, really brought like this Ed Camp Renaissance, and it was contagious seeing all the tweets and seeing all of our mutual friends jubilant. And a lot of that jubilance, one, was the personal connection, but two, I believe, is just the whole ethos of that Ed Camp, is this notion of choice, this notion of personalized learning, this notion of communal learning. I was envious. I was saying to my wife, I said, you know, let's move to Long Island. You know, there's just this great community of learners and spirit, and I was really inspired by that. So I'm grateful for you. I know you were part of the organizing team, and there were others there, but on behalf of the PLN, to see that unabashed joy in learning and connectivity was just a great dose of medicine for those of us who have, you know, not either been to an ed camp. I've been to an ed camp in probably 4 or 5 years, but again, it just, it gave a sense of hope and energy and excitement. So I'm excited to see y'all's next steps with Ed Camp Long Island and the conversations that follow. And that's what we want learning to be. That's what we want the educational space to be, you know, not only for our students and our learners, our young learners, but also for the grownups, the adults. We, you know, Ed Camp is that innovative. And again, it's not a whole lot of technology. You're not redesigning these kind of vast spaces, but it's just a simple, innovative pivot to create connectivity, to create learning, empowerment, and action for others. I didn't want you to, I'm glad you dropped Ed Camp, and I wanted to kind of riff on that with you a little bit. So thank you for sharing that. And that kind of leads us to the last idea, which, you know, any talk of literacy, we also must, you know, yes, we must talk of reading and fluency and comprehension and decoding and choice boards and menu boards, but also this notion of writing, which kind of brings us full circle from the beginning of our conversation and our ongoing conversation, where we talk about this notion of consuming and creating. And really being active in that pursuit of creation.
Yeah. So reading and writing are a reciprocal process, right? And in order, in schools, we always say, oh, in order to get to be a better reader, you have to read more. It's the same thing with writing. And what are some ways that we can do that for our students that empower them, right? Like we were talking before, that's engaging, but what's something that can be used across the content area in a very, very non-judgmental, low-stakes kind of way, but also in that process builds the capacity of our writers and our thinkers? So years ago, I discovered Harvey Daniels did this work with dialogue journals, and they really are, it's really a written conversation between two people. It could be between peers, it could be between teacher and student, it could be between colleagues. And I asked the question, what practice can help you connect with learners and elevate writing across the content areas when I talk about this practice? And it gets all learners to open up and talk in their writing, whether they're introverted, extroverted. It kind of levels the playing field and creates an equitable space for students to share their learning. And what it is you can do this in many ways. You could have writing journals that are physical writing journals that you're traditionally writing in, like letters to each other back and forth. You could do this in a digital space, like a Google Doc, right? And what it is you can start with a prompt. It's a free writing prompt, or it could be more specific. Let's say in science, for example, if you're studying phenomena and you put on a video of phenomena, you might start with a comment about what you're seeing, a question about what you're seeing, a wondering about what you're seeing, and you can intentionally start embedding content vocabulary into some of those questions or into some of those responses. What's kind of cool about that, and I'll use the example of phenomena in science, because I feel like that also brings in curiosity with students and natural wonder when you're studying phenomena, is when I saw this happen in a classroom. I was years ago when I was an instructional coach, I was helping a teacher elevate not only their writing practices, but ways that the teacher can formatively assess how their students are doing with the learning in science. And this is one of the ideas we came up with. So I remember being, we were looking at phenomena. It was a truck that was moving at a pretty fast speed. And there was a blockade in front of the truck, maybe about 1,000 feet away, and you can see it. And this truck is moving really fast. And the teacher stopped it right before the truck is about to hit this blockade. Of course, everybody's okay. Nobody's around. Yeah. You know, nobody was gonna get hurt. But the kids started asking questions. Oh, I wonder how fast this truck is going. I wonder how far that blockade, that barrier that was in the way, will travel due to the impact of this truck. That gets into the whole idea now of forces and motions,
Right.
right?
Right. Brilliant.
And it's brilliant. And so kids are starting to write to each other back and forth, just starting with a question. I wonder what would happen if, right? And then they pass the journal to their classmate or to their teacher, because I think when you're in a classroom doing this, I think teachers should be involved in participating. You're always modeling what you want to see, and you're a learner in the class too. We're all teachers and learners in our space, and you pass the notebook along, and the student responds back, right? Then the teacher puts on more of the video. And now you get to maybe make a prediction about what's going to happen, or you get to talk about what happened with the truck and ask a new question. And all of this really, it creates this space where you're using academic vocabulary. You could, right? You could do this in social studies. You could do this in math. You could do this with literature, with informational text, whatever you want to do. But you're also elevating writing. And as kids are talking about content, you're also lifting their writing skills and linking ideas. Such a brilliant way to get kids to start voluminously writing, and they don't even think they're really writing, because they're like writing like pen pals back and forth to each other. Great thing to do at a faculty meeting too. You could have teachers pass around this journal, starting with a question. It could even be what turned you into a reader, and they could be writing back and forth to each other. But it's a great way to keep the dialogue going, to build capacity within our writers, to build stamina within our writers, and for the teacher. I usually don't like to, with dialogue journals, I don't like to make corrections in kids' journals. That's not what this is for. You're modeling. If you're the teacher and you want to model for kids by writing back, you can slip in there feedback by modeling, taking a word they might have spelled incorrectly, or maybe they didn't capitalize proper nouns
right on
in their writing, and you're then writing them back. You're taking that note. Ooh, I want to show them they didn't capitalize proper noun. I'm now going to do it in my response to them. But you don't touch their writing, because this is a space where you just want the ideas to flow. You want them to create. You want them to be thinking freely and getting their ideas down. So these dialogue journals are awesome. I actually linked in the blog post a separate blog post that I went a little bit deeper with dialogue journals. So for anybody who wants to try them, there is a separate blog post that gets a little bit more into that. But what's nice about this too is a teacher, let's go back to phenomena for a second. If a teacher wants to play that video again of the phenomena, and ask the same question, maybe towards the end of the unit or mid-unit, see how much more content vocabulary kids start to include in their writing as they learn new vocabulary. So you might do this in the beginning and the vocabulary might be very basic, right? Or they'll use their background knowledge, their schema about what they know about the topic. But as you teach in to this unit of study, that content vocabulary you hope to evolve, or you can even say to them directly, I want you to try to include in your dialogue journals today a couple of more vocabulary words than you did last time that go with this unit.
And what better way to ignite a student's creativity and critical thinking, you know, which typically this just sounds like a safer, much more student-centered way to do that, rather than, all right, here's this large project or here's this large task that you have to do that is going to force you to be creative or force you to use critical thinking. This sounds much more organic, and again, it's getting in on it's meeting them where they are, which I love about that, and it's fun to do, right? Students, this is a different way of learning, a different way to express knowledge, a different way to connect to knowledge, and students like that. Students appreciate that in some way, shape, or form. Lauren, I got to tell you, this in my mind, as I'm listening to you and learning with you, I'm thinking, my God, this is like five or six different podcast episodes. And before we go, I have one last question, and I would be remiss if I don't ask you this. And I'm going to do a variation on music and courage. As for those you're a long listener, a long time listener of the Principal Liner Notes podcast, and we always make some connection to music. And you also know, and I'm very grateful for your contribution to my latest book writing project on profiles and educational courage. And you wrote a beautiful vignette, which I can't wait for the rest of the world to see. And in fact, if you are looking to see more of Lauren's writing, definitely check out her blog post at laurenmkaufman.com. It's real easy to subscribe. And every time, whether it's a Sunday, Saturday, Friday, Tuesday, whenever it is, when the spirit has moved her and she has come up with a great idea, you'll get that blog post in your inbox. So I highly recommend that at laurenmkaufman.com. And then if you also want to read more of her writings in book form, and you can't and you're looking forward to my book and her beautiful contribution that will be coming out in 2023, please be sure to order Because of a Teacher, Volume One, which she made mention George Kuros. He edited and curated all of those stories, and Lauren wrote a beautiful story in that book. And then also Lainey Rowell's Evolving with Gratitude. We're both in that book, and we created a vignette, separate vignettes for Lainey's beautiful book on gratitude and connecting that to neuroscience and classroom practice and all great things. So I'm gonna ask you a question, Lauren, that's gonna connect music and courage. Okay. A lot of this piece in Four Ideas to Leverage Learning requires the learner to tap into some courage. There may be some hesitancy, there may be some fear because it may be because of imposter syndrome or the culture of the school or whatever is inhibiting that teacher. So if you hear of that teacher that may be struggling to put some of these four ideas to leverage learning into practice, what would be a song that you would encourage them to listen to maybe get them fired up or to give them that courage to take some of these ideas or one of these ideas and to put them into practice in some way, shape, or form?
My goodness. Okay. I'm thinking off the top of my head.
No,
Gosh,
no
I love
judgment in
music.
any songs. No judgment.
Okay.
So
I'm thinking right now. Okay. I'm gonna go with Rachel Platten's fight song.
nice. Which is
Yes.
that's a good song. It's empowering and it's active. And so that yeah, that's yeah, we may have to put that song in the show notes and tag Rachel to that. But you're right. That's a great uplifting song for any occasion, right?
You know what? It just actually took me back memory lane. I think I was setting up my classroom one year, and when I was still teaching, and I always listened to music while I would do that. I always listened to music in general, even when I'm working.
Nice.
And I think that song came on, and it just like pumped me up for the school year. I was like, yeah, I could do this. This is my fight song. So I don't know why it made me think of that, but I'm sure there's like I'll think of probably 20 more songs after we get off of this call.
Isn't it great how and very very similar to the question, what book, inspired you to be a reader, and how when we have those personal connections, whether it's to a book or a song, and even just now in that question, I mean, you went back there. I can see you, with the stapler and the fadeless paper, singing along. I'm like, you know what? I've got 37 kids in the class. I don't have any planning, but you know, by God, we're going to do this. This is going to be a great year, or whatever. You know, I mean, that's music
I'm
does
just,
matter.
it's funny, you're making me Google the lyrics right now. You know, this is my fight song, take back my life song, prove I'm all right song.
Yeah.
I'm all right. I'm gonna be all right.
You're going to be
We're all
all
gonna,
right.
we're all gonna be all right. You know, listen, there's always somebody to turn to in education, right? Education's hard. You know, it is the most gratifying job, career, life's work on the planet. It really is. You're impacting the hearts and minds of kids. But there are days where it gets hard. There's no doubt about it. And you have to know that, you know, you have your fight song. There's always somebody who you can turn to, you know, even if it's me or you, Sean. You know, through the power of technology, you can always reach out to somebody. You know, somebody reached out to me the other day through Twitter. It was like the most heartwarming thing ever. You know, it was a teacher, young teacher, new in her career. She had read a blog post of mine, and she just said, "Lauren, I just really connected with this, and can you give me some advice?" And I called her. You know, she called me. I think I gave her my number. I said, "I have to, you know, there's something about it where I'm going to talk to this educator." And we did. We spoke. So that's one example. You know, there's always somebody to turn to.
Yeah, I mean, even though we talk about, and you probably remember this from principal school or teacher school, the gig can be lonely, right? I mean, you are the only teacher in that room if unless you're co-teaching or you have a TA, you're the only, you know, you may be the only assistant principal in your building, or the only principal in your building in my case, or you're the only director of K-12 literacy in your district. But and there are moments when we can be alone, and moments when we feel disconnected. But even though we may be in the ring, right? You know, there's still people behind that fighter. There are still people cheering you on, or there's still that manager, that trainer that gives you I don't even know, I don't even box. You know, I'm just basing this upon Rocky movies right now, but what I used to see as a kid. But there's always someone that you can lean on and lean into that will provide that support. And I'm grateful that you are that thought leader and bandmate for me. And I'm not surprised that someone did reach out to you on Twitter, because you are that for so many. And what you bring and what you share and what you give and what you create in the educational space. So you definitely help make the world a better place for others. You definitely empower us to be connected and to collaborate and to take active giant steps in this educational space. So I am glad to be on the flip side of the album with you. I'm always there for you, and I am just excited about, you know, future writings and future presentations and keynotes that will be coming your way, and I look forward to the folks who will be reading your work and cheering you on and responding. And we're bandmates for life, pal. So I'm grateful for you, Lauren.
For life. I'm not going anywhere, friend. You've got me. So thank you for all of that. Thank you for having me back on the podcast. It was an honor and a pleasure. And hope you have a great rest of your
Absolutely. Friends,
day.
this is the Principal Liner Notes podcast. This is Sean Gaylord with his bandmate and thought partner for life, Lauren Kaufman. Very grateful for your time. Listeners, grateful for Lauren's time. Please be sure to follow. And Lauren, what's the best way they can follow you on Twitter? I know you got a couple of accounts. What's the best one?
Yes. Well, for all things writing and podcasts and my thinking and sharing out articles and things like that, it's at LAU7210. And then if you want to follow me and see what I'm doing on the school front, it's at Lauren Kaufman GC. And on Instagram, it's Lauren M. Kaufman. And of course, you could follow my blog, as Sean said before, laurenmkaufman.com.
And it's my favorite blog. It is. It really is. You are it. So Be sure to follow those accounts. Not only will you see the great things that are happening in Lauren's district, but you'll also be able to get a peek into what she's thinking about and sharing. She's great about sharing content. You get to see her beautiful family. I feel like I'm on that journey with you and your boys and your husband. So thank you for allowing us to be a part of your world. And thank you, listeners, for being a part of the Principal Liner Notes podcast. This is episode 95. This is Sean Gaylord with his bandmate, Lauren. We will catch you on the flip side. Thanks again for tuning in.
Thank you. Bye.